Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Come join us on this trip. No, more like journey. We're throwing out the script. We don't charge a penny.
Yes, absolutely. 1, 2, 3.
Just like clapping cheeks. Two good claps and then you're done.
You are the official 1 minute man.
The 1 minute. We can rebuild him. We have the technology.
The technology.
We have Google.
Success!
No, SpongeBob.
We have Google.
We're not cavemen. We have technology. You know, I learned the other day that when they try to break into Sandy's house when she's hibernating for winter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When she's so Patrick is trying to get into the house. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you think he says "Open Sesame"? Wrong. Put the subtitles on that episode. He says "Open Sesame."
Open Save Me.
No, I speak no lie, bro.
Open, save me?
Says me. Says. Open.
Open, says me.
Open, says
me. Oh. Okay, so yeah. That makes more sense.
And speaking of, goodbye, Tom Kenny and Bill Faberback. Faberback.
Yeah.
You know why they've decided to retire?
Nah.
Due to criticism. SpongeBob is leaving Viacom and Nickelodeon because the two lead actors can't be bothered with our bullshit. That just says a whole lot about this generation that I don't want to know about.
Yeah.
Unless it's criticism from our generation, sort of watching SpongeBob on a nostalgia trip and being like, what the fuck is this bullshit? Oh, hang on.
What the fuck?
I just ripped cheeks into my mic, bro.
Jesus.
Oh, it smells like shit. Sorry, I had we ordered chicken today for dinner.
Yeah.
Today, rather than getting like wings and fries and shit, I just got half chicken and I was like, oh, let's try the peri peri corn on the cob. That shit was juicy. You know when you sometimes you get corn on the cob and you're disappointed, like there's no butter, it's dry and it's burnt?
Yeah.
Complete mm-hmm. opposite. This shit had like peri-peri, like I think they used like a peri-peri butter rather than just like butter uh-huh. and peri-peri. That shit was spicy. That shit was juicy. It didn't stick in your teeth as well because it was cooked properly. I see your mouth watering. You.
I'm just like, sounds... Moist.
Moist. That's your daily ASMR, folks. Right, so welcome to Freeballing,
there
everyone.
There you go. Yep, it's going to be an interesting episode.
I have no fucking idea what's going on.
Yep.
So, Sebastian, hurt my feelings.
So it was, I mean, it's a pretty interesting idea. I thought it would be fun where we each, you know, get an episode where we plan it out and the other person has no fucking clue what is happening. Just to get a more, like, authentic and off-the-cuff response.
You really love this off-the-cuff idea. We did it for one episode, and that off-the-cuff episode does not even exist anymore. But the idea of it exists.
But the idea, because we did it wrong. It's off-the-cuff, but this is off-the-cuff with structure.
So it's not off-the-cuff. Gotcha.
It's at the edge of the cuff.
Edge of the cuff.
Yes, we're edging right now. We're edging very, very hard.
I hope our audiences don't really know what edging means, but let's do this. And if you do, stop.
Stop. What are you doing?
What are you doing?
Right. So we've talked about, you know, what we do for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of wanted to use this episode as an opportunity to dive a little further into that.
Oh, fuck.
So what better way to do that than to talk about the things that influence us?
Okay, that's not too bad. I didn't know where you were going to go with that. That was a pretty vague opening. I was like, oh shit. Do not tell me to think of an idea, because we do not have that long.
So the idea is for us to talk about five people. Mm-hmm. They could be musicians, they could be comedians, writers, directors, they could be painters, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But you can only pick five that have influenced you in your creative career, and how and why they influenced you.
Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll kick things off so you can start thinking about some stuff.
I've got 1, 2, 3 at max.
You gotta give me 5.
It's gonna be hard.
That's this is where the swerve comes in.
I need for this is currently in use, being a video for me. I need to who worked on this and who's in this band? Fuck's sake, man.
Good, stop! Yeah, you gotta use,
good God,
gotta
man.
Use the old noodle.
The cheese
gotta
touch.
Use the old noodle, bro.
I've watched too many TikToks with that sound.
Stop!
Jesus.
Good God, man. The cheese touch. Okay, right. Take it away. Take it away, Smash.
Right. So, my first influence is a recent one. You and I have kind of talked about him already.
Mm-hmm.
It's director Paul Thomas Anderson.
Director, writer, videographer, cinematographer.
Mm-hmm. He wears all the fucking hats. And I remember when you and I were first talking about him, you were like, what's up?
This guy just loves hats, bro.
He loves hats. Give him all the fucking hats, dude. Like, you were surprised. You were surprised that I was getting into him.
I was surprised that he was a big influence on you now.
And it was like, and it's not his writing. Because there's some disconnect between me and his writing. It's his directorial style. It's his shot choice that I really connect with. And the way he does his movies. There's like an old school quality to him that I connected with.
Mm-hmm.
And like for the shot that really did it for me was the opening shot of Boogie Nights.
The long wanna.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's obviously, you know, it's a nod to Goodfellas and stuff, but like there's something about it where it's like it's following Burt Reynolds through with the club, and then it kind of breaks off of him, goes around, and we're meeting all of our key players in one fucking stroke, and it was just like, oh.
It starts with zooming into the club. We're on,
mm-hmm.
It's Burt Reynolds. We see Luis Guzman, who is the owner of the club. And then he's walking through, and then he sees Roller Girl. And that's that's the handoff. So if you don't know what me and Sebastian are talking about, I used the term wanna. I know for a fact there's a few people that watch the podcast. Good job, Ed. Who listen to the podcast who might not know what a long wanna is. And that's like famously recently, there's 1917, where, yeah, quote unquote, it is all one shot. It's not
one shot,
yeah, but of course, it's made to look like one shot. But
yep.
And then before that, you may remember Spectre with the Day of the Dead. If you want to say that in the right way, Sebastian, because you are part of the people. I'm not.
Day of the Dead. I mean,
I thought it was Dia de los Muertos or some shit.
I mean, yeah, if you're saying it in Spanish, but yeah. Dia de los Muertos, yeah.
Speaking of, some guys only appeared in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the comics, twice, is getting his own spin-off? El Muerto?
Yeah.
Like, what the actual fuck?
Fucking Bad Bunny's doing it?
Yeah, nah, I'm good. I'm out. Like, okay, Marvel's like, oh, let's just, barrel scrape. DC can do Blue Beetle. Well, what can we do?
To be fair, that's a Sony thing, not a Marvel thing.
Yeah, it will still have that fucking Marvel banner on it, though, won't it? Because that's how Sony makes money.
True.
Shots. Pew, pew. You work for Sony, you're part of the problem. So it's just where the camera doesn't cut, it just follows. And a handoff is when sort of the camera sort of slows down and who we've been staying on sort of does something or has an action or like a connection with someone, and the camera sort of shifts to a new person, and then we stay with them and we're off again. So that is that is a wanna. But like you said, Goodfellas is a good one. I'm trying to think where else have I seen one that's... it's proper naughty. I feel like I really like the one in Spectre. It might literally be the only good moment in Spectre is the opening in the Day of the Dead sequence with the helicopter. Just like, my dad's just like, do people down on the ground think this is like some sort of air show or something? Yeah, helicopter coming right at them, smoking, Dad. Yeah, so it's an air show. Fucking idiot.
I mean, it's not a very good one.
Yeah. This is one helicopter. It's not really doing much. It's just spinning.
It's, and then it's crashing down. Like, you guys, come on. Stay of the Dead. You can do better.
So back to Paul Thomas Anderson, really. So his filmic style, which is good because I kind of want to, I think I know one of the other people you're going to mention, and I'll talk about the connection between those two fellows when we get to...
All right.
Him, because I think he's
sounds good.
If he's not, if whom I'm thinking of isn't in your top five, then I don't know you. but if it's not, I'll bring it up. Because me and my dad watched a film over the weekend. We asked for your assistance, and I told you what we watched. And my dad had a very good comment that he made that has sat with me, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're a combination of these two people, then you might be onto something. So my first person would have to be Jim Sturgess. He is the actor in 21.
Mm-hmm.
He's also in that Beatles movie that you like. Is it Beatles?
Oh, Across the Universe, yeah.
Across the Universe. He's in Across the Universe. He's in a few TV shows. I only really know him from 21, to be honest. I'm trying to think where else. Oh, he was in Cloud Atlas as well. He plays... one of the only stories you can actually kind of follow in Cloud Atlas, which says a lot about Cloud Atlas. crazy movie, great book, crazy movie.
Is it out of a Wachowski movie?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Before.
Makes sense.
I think one of them had already made the transition to being a woman. The other, I can't remember who. Who's who? The Wachowski sisters, let's call them that. That's what they want to be known as now, so that's how we will refer to them.
Yeah.
yes, this is a Wachowski sister movie. I like the movie. I like Cloud Atlas. But Jim Sturgess, for me, I watched 21, I think, in about... may have been 2008. I remember this movie being either around about the same time as The Dark Knight or, like... very, very close. There was one, I used to have a movie going buddy, and I came home from holiday, and it was like, oh mate, do you still want to go see 10,000 BC? And it's like, nah, I saw that movie, piece of shit. I want to go see 21. I was like, okay, cool, it's your birthday. So I went to go see it. And I was like, this guy, man, let me do a bit of research. And he did music, media, and performance at Salford University. And I loved his acting style. He's from, and I learned he was from London. And I was like, yo, you know, this guy did what I did. Like, I found, like, I realized through looking at his IMDb, he didn't really start acting, like, professionally until after he'd finished university. So I was like, oh, so you can go to education, do education, and then come out and work. Oh, that's cool. And, like, at the time, I was really into acting. I meant really into acting. And I don't know why, but I had such, like, I had such love for Jim Sturgess that the... I'm pretty sure when I learned he went to Salford, I was looking for universities myself.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck it, you know what? Let's do this. I had an audition at Kent, which is like a million miles away from me. Couldn't have been further away. I had an audition at Northampton. I had an audition, I can't remember which universities I went to. It was Northampton, Kent. I think you choose just three. I went to DMU as well, Leicester. I went to Leicester as well, so it's four. I think you have five. Where was the fifth? I don't know, because I didn't go there. all I remember is like I got accepted to all of them. So, like, everyone wanted me. And my mum, like, not to speak ill of my mum, but, like, she was very much wanting me to go to Kent, because family members would come around, and my mum's like, oh, yeah, he's chosen to go to Kent. Yep, proper school for proper people. And at this time, I hadn't even auditioned at Salford. I went to Salford, I auditioned, and it was one of the only places where they said, choose your own monologue, fuck it. And we get there, and the main guy that was doing it was like, oh, like he came in to sort of say hello to other people. Like, it was me and like three other people who were auditioning that day. Not like a million. Kent had about 100. DMU had about 100. You get this whole campus-wide tour. You get all this, like, you get the works, basically. And, like, you know, you get to sit in a class. They make you feel like a proper student. I get to Salford. This guy shows up, Malcolm Rayburn. What a legend. He goes, you know what? Fucking woke up 30 minutes ago. Didn't even realise there was meant to be auditions today. I thought everyone came last week. All right, fuck it. Let's just go find a class that isn't like a classroom that isn't being used and get some auditions done, right? I was like, fucking yes, what a legend. even the teachers here are getting fucking wasted, bro. Absolutely for me. So we go into this class I already knew it was prepare your own monologue. But all these other places was like, you know, what? Here's your Shakespeare, here's your Chekhov. You know, I was like, oh, fucking something modern, man. I did I'm as mad as hell and I'm not gonna take it anymore. I know life is bad right now and it's always been bad and it's only gonna get worse. And I fucking nailed it, man. And this guy just goes, look, if I had the power to say yes right now, you're in. Like, you know, take it easy till after summer. Come here and we'd love to have you. And I think it's just how chill the place was. And I go there, and then I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, I'm in the footsteps. I'm in the footsteps of Jim Sturgess. So I'm going on a bit of a story here, but like, I probably should have saved this to number one. I feel like I'm in the footsteps of Jim Sturgess. All because of fucking 21. A movie that is badly rated across the board from critics and audiences. But I show that movie to people, and they love it. My dad, the boys. You know the boys. You met the boys. You're going to see the boys in summer.
Yep.
Even you as well. Everyone who I know, who is around me, in my inner circle, has seen 21 and has gone, you know what, that's a pretty good fucking movie, man. It's just chill. Get a couple of beers. You going to Vegas? Mm-hmm. Fucking watch 21.
Yep.
You know, it's that kind of thing. And I was still into acting. And on my first day, who's there? Just say, who's come in to say hello to old teachers? Jim Sturgess.
Fuck.
Go around to the local pub, buy the fucking man a pint. Great fucking story, bro. And I just like destiny. Well, even though from after the first year of Salford, I chose to quit acting because I realized the world doesn't need another Nick Frost and decided to focus on writing or directing. But I wouldn't have had I gone anywhere else where film would have been like an extra class. Everywhere was like, we do drama studies. You can do an extra degree in film studies if you wish, but like our drama course is very intensive, you know. I was like, oh, fuck off using big fucking words, man. just fucking tell me that, you know, that, you know, it's three pieces of acting bollocks a year, and you're gonna make me do some fucking day out of day logbook. There's coursework, there's a few exams, and then, you know, blah 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 in front of 20, 40 people. Fucking, you don't have to use the fucking word intensive, man. Don't fucking suck the dick of your own fucking job. I mean, come on, just fucking. That's why I liked Salford, man. It was down to earth. There was no dick sucking. Like, this guy's like, we've got a pretty good facility. I imagine it's gonna get better, like, over the next couple of years. But, like, you know, we do what we can with what we've got. But I tell you what, we've got a course that you shape. Every single university was, you do these courses. Salford was, you get a little taste in the first year. The second year onwards, you choose what you want to do. You wanted to focus on acting, you fucking do that. You want to do a little bit of both, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, you fucking do that. You know, not that you really know what you're going to do in life and you'll probably do nothing, but you do that. And then if you want to focus on media, you focus on media. You had those options. And that's what I liked.
Paid for by the alumni of Salford University.
But when what happened to me when I got accepted into NYFA? Hey, Ed, can you come on down to Salford and give a talk about how you've been doing since you've left Salford? Oh, mm-hmm. Fuck off. Oh, NYFA, fuck. Did I tell you that NYFA did the same thing? I spoke to Cinnamon about this, and she had no idea. Barbara Reintraub contacted me from NYFA.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if one of the things I'm working on has made a bit of traction within the mentors at NYFA, or if they've seen Together Alone fucking explode. I don't really want to speak about the other one because there's a few people working on that, and it's not my place to talk about it, like, alone.
Yeah.
But Together Alone is, like, you know, created by executive producer. I can talk about fucking this shit when I want to. so I'm going to talk about it right now, dickhead. Or if they've seen this, make a bit of attraction online.
You got to move on still, bro. Still got the rest of the episode to do.
Right.
So number four. This one was a little tricky. I was kind of stuck between two, which is kind of the fucking, if I was going to sum up my making of the list, is being stuck between one or two people per selection.
Well, for fuck's sake.
But, so for this one, I went with Aaron Sorkin.
I'm going to need to think of another guy.
and honestly, man, the movie that it was The Social Network that did it for me. Same. Like, I remember watching that when I was 18, and I was like, I never connected with the movie because of the writing.
Mm-hmm.
Which was just fucking, it was so frenetic, but it was also so, like, purposeful. Mm-hmm. And you could feel the rage when people were really feeling the rage, and you could feel, like, the seduction of, like, Timberlake to Eisenberg, and it's just like, all he's doing is talking.
Yep.
But he's just pulling you in, and Aaron Sorkin is just, and also, Sorkin's fucking turn on Entourage, I rewatched it, and it was just like, he's funny. He's surprisingly funny.
Yep.
And like, all the stuff from the fucking West Wing, too. I haven't seen it, but I've seen that fucking Martin Sheen monologue thing that he does in the church.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you have to be some kind of out of your fucking mind writer to throw fucking Latin into a TV show today.
No, he's just well-rounded. He's just smart. He does his research. Mm-hmm. This is what I implore to every writer. I know too many writers that just write.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't, you know, give me some of your favorite writers of all time, and I tell you fucking what, they do their research, man.
Yeah,
they've got the idea.
They put in the work.
They can't wait to fucking get pen to paper. I mean, that's what it should be like. And if you're getting halfway through an idea and you're struggling where to go, put that fucking thing down and start again. Because if you're struggling to write, you don't know about it well enough. It's not in. You're not passionate about it enough. You haven't done enough research, and you've fucked yourself from the get go.
Yep.
Yep. I'd like to choose another writer, but I don't know what I'd choose. Who did I have just in my mind now? I was ready to go with a name. Oh, fuck me. Oh, come on, cunt.
Come on. You can do it. We believe in you.
Oh. I cannot for the life of me think who I was just thinking of. But I thought that was perfect. That's me. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Because you mentioned Aaron Sorkin and sort of like writing that influences you. And sort of another thing that influenced me. And I'm like, I don't know why I need to talk about my life before writing and directing, because that's where I am now. I kind of want to talk about like what got me here. And another thing that got me here was, it's pretty bad to idealize it now, but Jeremy Piven. I knew for a fact I wanted to go into NYFA. I wanted to produce shit. Mm-hmm. And I knew I was a man of words. Like when someone asked me, it's like, Ed, why don't you pull birds in the fucking dance floor? It's like, because I'm a 300-pound fucking teddy bear with eczema. I sweat like I've been swimming, and I've got dance moves like a retarded monkey with Alzheimer's, bro. Like, no girl's looking at me and going, fucking hell, unless she's blind. in which case, fucking bang on.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Fuck yeah, dude. But, like, Ari Gold, he was a man of words.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this man, like, he knew the English lexicon inside and out, bro. Like, he knew,
yep.
He knew like, what to say to anyone at any one time. Even when Turtle comes in with like some bullshit idea, like he knows not to sort of blow him off, because it will look bad on who's the main guy?
Vince.
It will look bad on Vince. It'll come back to him in a bad way. So it's like, I'm not going to completely blow you off, but if this is real, prove to me it's real. And I was just like, fuck, man, this guy is smart. And then who can forget going into the fucking boardroom and just get the fuck out.
Yes.
I love this man. And I was like, yo. Like, I don't know, like, I know he's not really a producer until the movie, but I saw the movie before the series.
Mm, I got you.
Yeah, yeah. It was one of those movies back in the day where me and my friend were like, we had to watch 4 movies a month to reach our sort of monthly quota of making the most of our like cinema pass that we have. So I was like, let's go see this. We both saw it, and then like we saw each other 2 weeks later having a couple of drinks in the bar, and we're like, by any chance have you watched Entourage? And I was like, I finished it, mate. Fucking same. And like we literally spent about like a good 4 hours just talking about the best scenes, how great Ari was. And he's like, my mate's just like, oh, is that what you want to do then? And I was like, kinda, yeah. Like I'm a wordsmith. And I know how to use my words, like in an Ari kind of way. Just maybe not sort of as bridge burny, but as I've gotten older, I'm probably more bridge burny than I am not. well, at least I realise. Yeah, right. Okay, cool. So that's 2 for 2. Number 3, dickhead.
Right, number 3 is I think this is who you were mentioning. This is, in terms of just overall filmmaking influence, it's Kevin Smith.
There we go. Yeah. Tell us why, Sebastian.
So Kevin Smith for me, he's a unique one, because it's
Mr. Grinch.
Everything behind. Like everything behind like the scenes and every, you know, so the first Kevin Smith movie I saw was Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. And if you watch that without watching everything before, there's a lot of shit you're not going to get. But I still thought I thought it was fucking funny. I was like, I think I was 10 when I first saw the movie, which is really not good considering the fucking movie. But I loved it, and I thought that shit was fucking hilarious. And then as I got older, I saw Clerks, and then I saw this like 10-year anniversary documentary of Clerks and how he was talking about making it. And it was just like, this is a guy who decided one day, you know what? I'm going to make a movie. I don't know any big actors, but my friends, you know, they're funny as fuck, and they're willing to help me do this, and yeah, fuck it. And this guy built a career off of working with his friends, telling fucking dick and fart jokes, and he made a life for himself. Like, yeah, that's what I fucking want. Like, I want to be able to work every day with my best friends, make a shit ton of money, make shit that I think is hilarious, and just have a good fucking time. And for me, that's what Kevin Smith has always been about. Like, if you watch every one of his movies, you know, you see fucking Jason Mewes in them. You'll see, sometimes you'll see Brian O'Halloran in there. And you're just like, he keeps working with his friends. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want. And his stories are very, like, there isn't...
Down to earth.
A whole lot of... Exactly. There isn't a whole lot of complexity to his stories, but his stories are very, I feel like they're very poignant. Clerks obviously being the biggest one, because it's just like, you know, it's like about a guy, he's the clerk. Like, no, it's a guy in his mid-20s, in his early 20s, trying to figure out what the fuck he's going to do with his life.
Mm-hmm.
And then Clerks 2, it's a guy in his 30s, like, what the fuck am I going to do with my life? And it's like the closer you get to those age brackets, you start seeing those themes and those things going on, and you're just like, fuck, he's right. What the fuck am I going to do with my life? And there's just like that new connection with Smith that I have now as opposed to before.
My meme, so you like the visual storytelling style of Paul Thomas Anderson, but you like the stories, yes, and like sort of the interconnection of friends from movies with Kevin Smith. Well, me and my dad watched Clerks last Sunday, as you know, and my dad goes, you know what? I'm pretty sure if given half a chance, Kevin Smith wouldn't film this the same way again. There's too much, like, I know for the time, all he could afford was handheld, but like, it's a lot of panning, it's very shifty, he films in black and white, I think, to get away from a lack of focus in times.
It's funny you mentioned that, because I was watching this documentary thing that they're talking about, like, cult classics, and he was asked about that. It's like, no, that wasn't a choice. We just couldn't afford color film.
Oh, fair play. Fair play.
I was like,
I thought it was always a choice. Like, with the moving the camera so much. Like, mm-hmm. I do not trust a focus puller. Like, I will never trust a focus puller that much to keep that much focus with that much moving camera.
Yeah.
But it was those moments where you see Kevin Smith now in Clerks, and it's when I think the moment for me is when Randall is in the store and the girl comes in and she's like, hey, have you heard of it? Like, you know, they say all this shit about the movies, but they don't tell you if it's any good. You know anything about these movies? Ah, they're all right. You weren't even looking. What about these two movies? Ah, they're all right. You see? It's the same two movies. I don't like your ruse to try and trick me, lady. And like, Randall just completely bars her off. And he's just sitting there, not even facing the camera. And I was like, nope. Boom, that is, I feel that's like locking down the camera and allowing the scene to breathe is Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
100%. And I think that's like, I feel like if Kevin Smith could go back, we'd see a completely different Clerks.
Mm-hmm.
Especially cinematography style. And you can see that between Clerks absolutely. And Clerks 1. You can see a director who has learned.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice when you're working with someone that's in the industry who notices that you've grown. I work with this post-production sound company quite a lot. And this guy is going like, mate, I remember you coming to me with like your first university project, struggling to like sort of pay for it. And now you're coming to me with like Together Alone. And I'm just like, yo, this is the same guy. Like, and it's like, it's nice. It's validation. You like to wank yourself off a little bit, but like sometimes you need those. Sometimes you need those. Right. So my director. What a great director, right? Like,
yeah,
just 1,000%. One of the best. No, my director is Park Chan-wook.
Park Chan-wook. Okay.
Old boy. 2003 Oldboy. The Vengeance trilogy. Lady Vengeance, Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance. Did Stoker as well. Did The Maiden. And I was like, South Korean movies wouldn't be where they are without his influence. There, I said it. Half the shit you've watched from South Korea has been made because those directors and writers probably watched like the Vengeance trilogy and was like, "Yo, we can make movies too, and we can make pretty good fucking movies." And then boom, we got Squid Game, and we got like all these other great South Korean movies. The Yellow Sea is another great. I think that's South Korean. I can't remember, but like just Asian cinema as a whole, I feel like is partly driven through the mid-noughties, where America like really began to sort of strangle the cinema industry. There was like these rebels that broke through, and Park Chan-wook was one of these rebels. And I remember up until watching Old Boy, my favorite movie was American Beauty. Thank God I watched Old Boy, because your favorite movie isn't allowed to be American Beauty anymore.
Nope.
I saw Old Boy and I was like, yo, the visuals in this movie were just stunning, man. I mean, Odasu is by himself for I think it's for 15 years in that fucking apartment, and he sees himself as like the lonely ant, an animal that's usually part of like this huge colony. I can say that word. And I was like, did Park Chan-wook just call like all of South Korean community ants? What the fuck? And then he's on the train. No, he's on the train and he sees himself as the ant. It's when he's in the apartment and ants like crawl out of his skin and out of his mouth. It's because he wants to be part of like the hustling and bustling. Like he's a people person, and that's what they talk about. It's like like later on in the movie they talk about like Odasu, he doesn't shut up. He's a bit of a smooth talker. He's a bit of a wisecracker, and like he sees too much, he speaks too much, that kind of thing. Just go see Old Boy if you haven't. Go see Old Boy, one of the greatest movies of all time. It's
such a good movie.
It's a director that knew what he wanted, like from every aspect of a movie, and like that is where I begun that. And I know who my next person is going to be. I can't really say that and my next person now, but like him sort of combined with another person really sort of helped me unlock that. The bigger idea of movies isn't just the beginning, the middle, the end. No, it's like, we're going to go off over here, we're going to go off over here. And I'm like, why? Why are we going? It's all coming together. it's like, no matter how far away you get, you got to come back. And it's like, it's where I learned to sort of describe movies as DNA strands. Two perfectly symmetrical lines, forever dancing around each other, but never touching. But forever going around, they follow each other. You never know who's in control. Yeah. Just when you think someone's in control, you're going somewhere else. Never let them know your next move, bro. And I just thought, like, that's the A story and your B story. Dancing around.
Dancing around, fuck yeah, dude.
Movies are like DNA, and what is DNA? Just one part of our entire physical being. Got to add in some blood. Got to add some blood flow. Got to add in some skin. Got to add in some veins. What's next to DNA? Fucking veins. What goes through it all? The blood, and then what wraps around it is your skin. Then you got to make that shit move.
Yep.
Boom. There you go. There you got a movie.
fucking A, dude.
And don't even start writing if any one of those things feels weak.
Yep.
Boom. That's my advice to anyone who's listening to this and thinking about picking up a pen or putting, what would you say, putting fingers to keyboard. I know the old phrase is
fingers to keyboard,
pen to paper, but it was like, I guess it's fingers to keyboard now.
Right? Fingers to keyboard, yes.
I finger
those keys.
Oh, finger those keys, so good.
Oh god,
just give me a bit of space. Right. Right. Number two.
Number two. Right. So number two for me is a comedian.
A comedian. Oh, sorry. Is that a movie?
Oh, no. So, for me, number two is George Lopez.
George Lopez.
So, a lot. These last two, dude, I'm going way back.
Oh, God.
like the beginning, like a little primordial ooze of like, this dude's a creative. So, when I was a kid, there wasn't a lot of what I would call positive representation of Latinos. Like, I grew up watching stuff where we were always portrayed a very specific way. And it was always either as the struggling family or the immigrant or the struggling immigrant. So it was always one of those two. And it was hard. It was kind of hard to see that. So it was like actively avoiding stuff like that for me. And then the George Lopez show comes out, I think 2002. And it's a guy who's married. He's got kids. He works, you know, pretty labor intensive job, but it's middle class. And it's like, my dad does that. My mom stays home. I'm a kid. There's other kids here.
I was with all the other kids.
And like, yeah, so like, you know, it was us on the screen, and it was crazy to see that, especially because it was on ABC. Like it was on one of the big networks. So I was like, holy shit, that's fucking crazy. And then, you know, the show went on, but it was always like that moment for me where I was like, okay, this is possible. And, you know, if I worked for, obviously, that dude worked his ass off. And it was fucking, of all the people to give him a break and give him this shot, it was Sandra Bullock.
How? Where? When?
She's in executive pursuit. She was an executive producer of the show.
What?
Yeah. Crazy dude. Shit. She was in a couple of episodes of the show, too.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it's like, so again, for me, it was that thing of, like, seeing a Latino on the screen in a way that hadn't been seen in forever, and in a very predominantly positive, you know, because obviously it's the 2000s. Some jokes aren't going to fly today, but like it was a fucking win, and it was a big one.
Yeah.
So for me, that was like, that was one of those turning points where, okay, you know, I grew up being, honestly, dude, being kind of ashamed of being Mexican, being ashamed of being Latino and stuff, and then seeing that, I was like, okay, I don't have to be, because we're not just that. We're not just gangbangers. We're not just, you know, people stealing jobs or whatever. Like, no, we are contributing. We're families. You know, we're people dealing with regular problems. It's not always like, oh, someone's getting kicked out of the fucking country. It's like, no, I've been fortunate enough to be in a place where I've never really had to worry about that. And it was like, oh, you can't tell those stories. Fucking why? Those are our stories. We're not all fucking struggling to survive. Some of us are surviving and dealing with other shit.
Yeah.
And that's okay. So that was like, that was a big thing for me. And so that's kind of where the trajectory of myself and what I wanted to do kind of began to shift.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until, so that's George Lopez. That's what he's my influence. Give me your influence. I could keep going, but I feel like...
No, man, I love hearing about, like, what drives my boys, man. Like, I tell me those stories. Like, I love hearing about people's influence. Like, there's nothing pains me more when I ask someone, like, sort of, what drives you, what keeps you going? And they give me some, mm-hmm. like, sort of vague, out their ass answer. And I was like, okay, cool. If you don't want to answer me, don't answer me. But
yeah,
there's nothing wrong with being open, I think, especially in 2022. Like, the more open I've gotten over the last couple of years, I feel like the better I have become. Yeah, there's moments of weakness and moments of doubt, but like, you know, if you're open with yourself, you can, you know, talk to the right people in the right way, you know, and they will soon remind you that there's, you know, there's reasons to keep going.
Yeah.
So my next person is there was someone I wanted to mention alongside Park Chan-wook just before now, if you remember, not 5 minutes ago. Walter Murch, the king of editing himself, was editing Apocalypse Now for so long, it went from splicing to digital, that half of Apocalypse Now is spliced and half of Apocalypse Now is digital.
Jesus.
And when you read in the blink of an eye, when you're asked as like one of the greatest editors of all time, someone who George Lucas looks up to, someone who Francis Ford Coppola looks up to, someone who Martin Scorsese looks up to, like, these people look up to an editor. Like, that's how we know the power of editing. Like, the power of editing, like, let's just, you know, a couple of years ago, we mentioned it in the Oscars episode, you win best editing, you win best movie. Why that changed with Whiplash, I don't know. But I don't know what won best movie the year Whiplash should have won. But, you know, I don't remember that movie, but I remember Whiplash very fucking well. And I feel like, for me, that was where the first time I noticed that best editing didn't win best movie. But when his book starts with a quote from George Lucas, I believe, and it's, when you walk into Walter Murch's room, he'll tell you one thing. Your movie can only look so good, but remember, 50% of cinema is sound. I know way too many people in this industry. Yes, a lot of full stops. Like, clap, you know that when people used to do the clapping emoji in between every word?
Yep.
That's what I'm doing right now. I know way too many people. Sebastian is literally looking at me, stopping myself clapping. He's like, is he going to clap? Is he going to clap now? Is he going to clap? No, I'm not, because it'll be too loud. I know way too many people, bro, that are like driven by visuals. I was like, yeah, it looks great, but it's going to sound like bullshit because you've neglected your bloody production sound into the darkest corner of fucking Mordor, bro.
Yep.
And if he's there struggling with his arms, you know, when you see a sound guy come off sound and the first thing he does is like to sort of thank God that he's not doing it anymore, you're fucked. Your sound's fucked. Your sound guy doesn't want to be there. He's not getting the sound you want to get. And if it's, and then it comes down to, so, oh, we'll just use the lavs. You mean this noise? Throughout all your fucking movie? Fuck off. Nothing beats a fucking good ass boom of a hypercardioid in between two of the greatest actors of all time getting some pretty good fucking sick dialogue.
Yeah,
if your actors aren't moving, lavaliers, fucking do them. But until they're not using this bloody fucking, the size of a bloody two cigarette boxes fucking fanny pack that's sticking out your fucking ass to fucking get to get good lavalier recordings, I'm not fucking trusting them, bro.
Yeah, no.
More people need to go to film school. Yeah, have a good idea of how to write, have a good idea of how to direct, have a good idea of how to produce. Fuck it, I don't give a shit. But there needs to be a teacher that needs to sit everyone down and go, fucking record this simple fucking scene between two guys recording. And if there's a blemish, if it peaks, if it's shit, fucking do it again until you get it right.
Yeah.
Nail in sound into these people. And my post sound guy, he helped me sort of see that. Like, I was sending him shit. I was like, bro, this movie looks sick, yeah? And then, like, a couple of days later, And like, and he was saying to me, it was like, okay, cool, yeah, it looks great, but like, there's a problem with your sound, man. And that's where I learned. And I went to NYFA, and I saw the same problem. All the, like, in a master's degree, I was seeing these problems. People were casting the same actor in all of their shit, and I literally stood up in front of the class and went, "Why is everyone casting this guy? He doesn't speak a word of the fucking Queens, bro." Not that anyone knew what I meant. I was like, "Fucking English, the Queen's English. Like, come on." It is not a bad thing to enunciate. Enunciate. Do you know what that means? It has nothing to do with physical contact. Is that, sorry, that's a. It's a Batman parody. The Joker can't stand Batman's voice anymore. It's like, I want to help you. I want to tell you where they are, but I can't hear a word that you're saying. It's like you've got. It's like you're riddled with cancer. Enunciate. 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 Do you know what that means? It has nothing to do with physical contact. It's fucking great. I'll send it to you after this. It's one of the greatest parodies of all time. But yeah, Walter Murch. Someone who is all about editing. So literally starts his editing book with 50% of cinema is sound. Boom. That's all you need to fucking know.
Fucking A.
Right, I've got a good last one.
Right. All right. I think mine's pretty good too. So
yours isn't going to be as good as mine.
Well, I guess we'll see.
No, we'll see. Yeah. We will see.
Like, well, yeah. Okay.
Give me your last one, bro.
So my last one is a comedian. For me, I swear to God, dude, I wouldn't be where I am if I hadn't discovered this guy when I did.
Oh, damn.
So for me, my number one is Robin Williams.
Robin Williams, nice. Love that guy.
When I was a kid, I would watch Aladdin, I would watch Mrs. Doubtfire, and I would watch, you know, that's pretty much all I watched of his when I was a kid. And it was him doing voices and him being over the top and being silly and being crazy. It was like, that's ultimately how I started when I was a kid. I was doing voices. I was so happy because I was able to laugh like fucking Woody Woodpecker when I was a kid. And I would do all these voices and I would play these games. And then whenever I was like playing with my toys and stuff, I never just played with them. I would always use them to like tell stories, and I would give each toy its own voice and little bits in that. And I would if I had Power Rangers, dude, I would like recreate episodes of fucking Power Rangers in my room, like to the detail. I was very detail oriented, and I would get so pissed whenever I would have family come over, and if they were playing with my toys, if they weren't playing with them the way I would take them away, and I would be like, no, you're playing with them wrong.
You told me that story before.
And then as I got older, I started watching more of his movies, you know, Good Will Hunting, and Dead Poets Society and a bunch of other stuff. And then seeing his stand up with you, there's just like, I connected with him on such a like spiritual level.
Hey Sebastian,
like,
how'd you get to the Royal Albert Hall?
What's up? Duh. Fuck you, don't do this to me.
Money.
Fuck yeah. Come on,
dude. Oh fuck, man. Like, he, like, honest, it's crazy to think, like, if I hadn't seen him when I did, when I was a kid, you know, really, because it wasn't that it was just funny. You know, there was, Jim Carrey is, you know, hilarious, and he was a big influence on me, too, but there's something about Robin Williams, yes, he was funny, but there was a strong heart behind it. That's what I connected with, and, like, it's one of the things that I try to put in all of my projects. It's like being over the top, being funny, and just being fucking bonkers, but still having the heart that when you walk away from this thing, you're like, you know what? That's going to stick with me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's, you know, that's what he did. That's what he did for me. So like when he passed, I was like genuinely hurt. I was like, whenever I hear about a celebrity passing, it's like, oh, that's, you know, that sucks. But like with Robin Williams, it was like a gut punch. It was so weird, but it was also this weird thing where it's like, okay, you know, he's gone. And it's around that time when I decided that, you know, this is the path I kind of wanted to take. And I don't know what it was, but him passing was just kind of the trigger. It's like, well, I got to get started, you know. This guy did it and he's gone. And what if one day I'm fucking gone and I'm a history degree and I'm going to go to law school? No, fuck that. I'm going to go to fucking film school. I'll be a fucking writer and be a director and I'm going to be fucking good. Yeah, man. And that's what I'm going to fucking do.
Fuck yeah, dude.
So yeah, that's my number one. What's your number one?
My number one? You really want to know?
Yeah.
You want to know who my number one is?
I do indeed.
Number one is you, bro.
Oh, fuck you. Nah.
I was still this loud British kid, you know. Like a lot of the students who I met, a lot of the American students who I met, a lot of the other foreign students who I met, were like sort of, oh, aren't the British meant to be like sort of posh? I was like, we're not all from fucking London, bruv. Like, shut the fuck up. Like, give me a movie, give me a beer. You say something stupid, I will fucking call you a moron in the middle of fucking class, bro. Like, be fucking prepared to hear me before you see me, bruv. Like, the amount of times, like, teachers come into a class, it's like, oh, I knew which class I was going to because I could hear Ed laughing. I was like, damn fucking right you could. Because you know why? I'm having fucking fun, man. But, like, it, like, for some reason, that did not translate to the movies I made. The movies I made, the way I was a movie maker was,
oh yes. Oh yes, story, drama. Oh yes, give me a genre-defining horror. Genre-defying horror. Oh yes, quite. Yes, we'll put the camera on sticks this time. And I was like, I was fucking, like, there was no fun behind it, man. There was no fun. And, like, it wasn't till I spent, like, a few days with you, and, like, I just remember one of our, like, you remember those drives we used to do?
Yeah.
We would finish school, and I'd just be like, take me somewhere, bro. I've only ever seen this gorgeous ass city in the movies. Show me somewhere that's real. And I was like, oh, you want me to show you somewhere that's real? And you took me about 50 yards down the Hollywood Boulevard. And I was like, you know why that you only ever see it looking that way? Because that way is the Hollywood Hills. That way is Hollywood. And that way is shit. And we went down that way. We went down that way.
We did.
And that's where the, like, now is the Kobe mural. Like, that's where, like, actual LA is, bro. You showed me actual LA. And I just remember one of the conversations we had. And I was just like, why aren't you in your movies, man? Why aren't you like this when you're making a movie, man? And I was like, what do you mean? I was like, you are funny. You make people laugh, and you don't even know how hard you make them laugh naturally. If you translate that to the screen, bro. And like, it just like, just mind, like, just opened, more influential than any director, any writer, because I definitely wouldn't be here right now. Like, everyone I've mentioned up until now got me to Knifer, but beyond Knifer, I've very much been myself, but at Knifer, where like I was struggling to keep up a little bit in that first semester, where like I was telling you, I was like, bro, I did shit in that one project, remember? It was like everyone had to direct, like, it was those
the workshop things.
It was the workshops. They were like PR workshops or whatever they were called or something. And mine sucked so badly. And I was telling him, like, bro, like, I don't know if I'm cut out for this. And then that was the night where we went to karaoke and we came home.
Yep.
It was like, yeah. Honestly, it was then onwards. I started to listen. I started to listen to other people. I started to let other people, like, rather than inspire me, help me. And that's what you did. Mm-hmm. Like, to, like, you know, I was very much like sort of, oh, you know, my scripts are my own scripts, you know. And then I started speaking to you and I was like, bro, take a look at this. Yeah, man. You just...
Fuck.
You had more of an impact on me as a filmmaker, as a person, and then you could ever realize, bro.
All right, you win. Fuck. You were right. Yours was better.
yo, I kind of do... I was about to speak about shit that we need to speak about after we've stopped recording. So bye everyone. I need to speak to Sebastian.
All right, take it easy everyone. This has been now. Don't remember to subscribe, share, give us a good rating, and we'll catch you guys next time.
Yeah, absolutely. See you guys. We love you.
On this trip, now Mullaiter and Crow wing out the scripts.
Come on, man, come join us on the trip.
I'm sorry.
Now we're throwing out the scripts.
I hear we don't charge a penny. I hear the weekend's calling. Now it's time to start. Free ball.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.